Penguin Random House Audio presents The Dog of the North by Elizabeth McKenzie. Read for you by Catherine Littrell. For C.E.R. For a while, I went berserk and wished it would never end. Part 1. 1. My plan was to catch the 10 o'clock train from Salinas to Santa Barbara, seeing as I had no car and a few problems to deal with there. It is never convenient to be without a car in California, but I was pretty sure I would be able to borrow my grandfather's Honda station wagon once I arrived, and Bert Lampe would pick me up. Though I had to leave suddenly, the timing was good, as I'd been living in a motel for the past 3 weeks and was looking for a good excuse to quit my job. You might say the Santa Barbara crises had been timed perfectly for my circumstances. Extricating myself from Santa Cruz, the site of my most recent failures, was very welcome, actually a relief. So I took a bus to Watsonville, transferring to another that would take me through Castroville to the station, and seeing as how chaotic things had been recently, the thought of being a passenger with nothing to do for the day but sit still while in motion was something to look forward to. Even so, I was on edge. After all, I'd be facing two unpleasant situations through which great anger was sure to be directed at me. I was used to being the object of anger, especially recently, but that didn't make it any easier. Adding to my general unease were thoughts of what I was leaving behind. In the past 24 hours, I'd abruptly left my job, burning a bridge that I was happy to cross for the last time, and I'd confronted my husband, Sherman. I know all about Bebe Sinatra and the cocaine. True, I took the cowardly way and wrote emails, but they were masterpieces of obfuscation. In no way did they reveal the depth of my disgust at what precipitated this rupture. They were the whimper rather than the bang at the end of my world, but I could not move forward if I were to permit myself the full brunt of my feelings. As the bus neared Salinas, I started to breathe evenly. A hair glinted on my sleeve. I pulled it off and let it fly out the slightly opened window into the fields of Brussels sprouts and artichokes flanking the highway. A rotten smell, like that from the neglected vegetable bin at the bottom of my last refrigerator, was blowing in. Despite the fact that I was finished with Sherman, I wondered where he was and what he was doing, and if I'd always wonder, no matter how humiliating the final days of our time together. For instance, last month, pouring Sherman's dirty clothes into the washer, I discovered a slightly worn pink thong. "Yuck! What's this?" I said. "Oh, I found a bag of stuff at a bus stop. Thought maybe you might like it." Repulsed, I held up the abbreviated scrap. "But the back part went up somebody else's buttock crevice." "Can't you just say crack like everybody else?" Sherman said with disgust, peeling back yet another layer of his true feelings toward me. "Sure. Whose crack was it anyway?" Nothing but anguish would compel me to say a thing like that. Eventually, I boarded the train and settled in. Just after the Zephyr left the station, the train door whooshed open, ushering in a cloud of patchouli oil and the sound of jingling metal objects. A woman came up the aisle and purposefully took the seat across from me. Small brass bells and coins had been sewn onto her billowy patchwork skirt. She then made eye contact and asked if I'd like to have my palm read for $20. $20 was a lot to me, but there I was, heading off into a great unknown. Once I dealt with the issues in Santa Barbara, my future was up for grabs. I was like the strand of hair blowing out the window, uprooted, alone. If ever there was a time I might want my palm read, this was it. So I agreed to it, and she took my right hand and began to study the fleshy side, tracing her finger along some of the lines. At last she said, "I can see that in your past lives you experienced many episodes of aggression. Here." She pointed to a place where two creases intersected. "I can see that you were once beheaded and also strangled." She looked up to gauge my reaction. Because I'm accustomed to disguising my feelings, she saw no reason not to press on. "And you're easily taken advantage of." I can't quote the rest of her findings, as I was immediately consumed by the information already imparted. For a moment, I wondered if she was mocking me for accepting her services, yet I wasn't willing to rule out that she had provided me with a valuable insight. The main problem was that the people sitting in front of me were talking loudly enough that I could hear them, and I'm unable to listen to two things at once, and quickly realized I'd much rather listen to them than this bleak history of bodily injury. I gave her the 20 and told her that would be enough. The people in front of me were discussing everyday matters, but it was somehow pleasant to listen to them. They needed to replace their garbage disposal because their teenage son had fed avocado pits into it. They'd go to a favorite restaurant in LA that evening. They had a meeting with someone tomorrow about a tax issue, but didn't seem worried about it. Every now and then, I heard them laugh. I suddenly realized I was being transported to the back seat of our family car, with my parents talking up front. Car trips always brought out the best in my mother, a geologist by profession, whereas at home, she was often restless and moody. So, while I had some of my best memories of them from the time spent with my sister in the back seat, any pleasure I took was quickly obliterated by the cruel irony that on a long drive, some years later, they disappeared off the face of the earth. My parents had already taken the step of vacating the Northern Hemisphere. They were creating a new life for themselves in Australia, ostensibly because they liked the climate and the geomorphology, enjoyed the adventure, and got good returns on the exchange rate. But it's also possible to say that they went to denounce the American dream and avoid the various unpleasant people who had damaged their lives. We, my sister and I, had taken their emigration in stride. In fact, my sister had joined them. But then they had to take it a step further and vanish altogether. My father, also known as my stepfather, also known as Hugh, was as detail-oriented and protective as a spouse could be. They were two people who would leave nothing to chance, who had planned every day of that trip, who provided us with an itinerary before leaving, complete with phone numbers and addresses of their stops along the way. The last known witness to see them alive, at a petrol station in Mount Isa, saw nothing to arouse his concern. Just a middle-aged couple, filling up and checking the air pressure in their tires. My sister and I did not know for several days that they had failed to show up at their next destination, nor was their car ever recovered. Search and rescue teams scoured the area for weeks and found nothing. Though nearly 5 years had passed, I hadn't really been able to accept or even think about it. In the late afternoon, I stood outside the Santa Barbara train station with my bag, waiting for Bert Lampe. He'd offered to pick me up and put me up for the night, and we were to have dinner to discuss the plan we'd execute the following day vis-a-vis my grandmother, Dr. Pincer. I had never met Bert in person, but had spoken with him a number of times by now. As Pincer's accountant, he had become one of the few people she trusted. Little did Pincer know that Bert called me secretly every time he saw her to keep me updated on her condition. The day was still bright and warm. As a child, I'd spent weeks at a time here with my grandparents and, despite how things had turned out, still had fond feelings for the place. I'd visited over the years too many times to count, though never before by train. I paced in front of the station, scanning the parking lot and beyond, hoping Bert hadn't forgotten. Finally, an old sea-green van entered the lot and pulled up before me. It had a number of gashes and dents on the body and looked slightly sinister. The man driving leaned over and rolled down the path.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?